Coming up on Tech News Today, Aereo's big win over the television networks. Tesla sales are electric, but what does that mean for consumers who bought the cheap model? And HBO says piracy, it's a compliment. How nice of you. All that more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, April 1st, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, Samsung Galaxy, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com.
And by Hulu Plus. Watch as many TV shows as you want, anytime, anywhere on your devices, all streamed instantly to you. Visit HuluPlus.com/twit to start your free 2-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/twit.
Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
Hey, there I am. Jason Howell without a mute button this time.
And this is the show where, mute button or not, we try to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world. We know it's April Fool's Day. We have relegated all April Fool's stories to the randomizer segment later on in the show. So when we say we're going to start you with the top 10 stories of the day, we mean actual news stories in the news feeds. Russia has begun enforcing a new law allowing it to block internet content deemed harmful to children. Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube are among companies asked to remove material under the law. Google removed an offending video but did file a lawsuit in Russian court contesting the removal. While the law narrowly attempts to control child pornography and the promotion of drug use and suicide, opponents worry it could lead to control of political speech.
IBM's Roadrunner is compiling off into the sunset. Do you remember Roadrunner? It was the first supercomputer to hit a sustained petaflop in operations per second. It's very exciting to me. This makes me lose my voice. The Los Alamos National Laboratory, Roadrunner's home base throughout its 5 years of operational use, will officially decommission the big guy today and its 12,960 IPM PowerX L8i and 6,480 AMD Opteron dual-core processors, nearly 114 terabytes of memory, and approximately 1.09 million terabytes of storage. Goodbye, little Roadrunner.
Bye.
New data from analytics firm Kantar says Windows Phone is gaining market share. In the UK, Windows Phone is up from 6.2% to 6.7% in 1 month's time. In Italy, Windows Phone is now 13.1% of the market. Last year in February, it was a paltry 5.4%. Microsoft's gain is BlackBerry's and Symbian's loss. Android and iOS, by the way, are still the top dogs all around the world.
The new number three. Apple's attempt to trademark the name iPad Mini has been denied by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office over the weekend. The trademark was deemed merely descriptive and did not create a unique meaning in the examiner's opinion. The patent examiner did give Apple several ways to reapply and get the trademark, one of which was to show that the term iPad has become distinctive and to clarify that Apple was only asking for a trademark on the word Mini in relation to the word iPad.
The Facebook home event is just days away, and the common thought is we're going to get a Facebook phone by HTC. Android police now say they've received some system software specs on the device. It sounds like Facebook Home may be a launcher replacement that runs on top of HTC's Sense 4.5 skin and Android 4.1.2, not Sense 5 that runs on the HTC One. Facebook Home may also run on phones besides an HTC device. Some permissions within the software looks like it's going to run on HTC Sense, stock Android, and TouchWiz. Android police believes this is a sign that the app is eventually going to Google Play.
The Wall Street Journal reports that Aereo is in talks with AT&T and Dish to partner up in some way. Aereo lets you watch broadcast television over the internet. The company also scored a legal win against broadcasters. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit sided with Aereo, rejecting an appeal from TV networks. The networks claim that Aereo infringes on their copyrights, since Aereo doesn't have a license to transmit its signals. The Court of Appeals says that the plaintiffs didn't present a reason why renting an antenna from Aereo and receiving a signal over the internet is different than an individual setting up their own personal antenna.
Saudi Arabia has threatened to block several internet messaging services, including WhatsApp, Viber, and Skype. Saudi Arabian Communication and Information Technology Commission issued a statement. It will take appropriate action if the services don't work to meet regulatory requirements. The commission did not state publicly what those requirements were, but CNN reports the government wants to be able to monitor conversations on the apps. A recent political protest was partially organized through WhatsApp.
Over the last couple of weeks, some Chinese consumers and media have been loudly criticizing Apple's lesser warranty coverage in the country, specifically about refurbished replacement devices compared to what Apple provides in other countries. Now, in an open letter addressed to Chinese consumers, CEO Tim Cook has apologized on behalf of his company and promises that, quote, Apple's commitment and passion for China are no different than for other countries. They're also taking to heart China's three guarantees law: repair, refund, and replace.
Before this weekend's season 3 premiere of HBO's Game of Thrones, HBO programming president Michael Lombardo called piracy of the show a compliment. Game of Thrones tops revenue generation for HBO in DVD and international sales, but also was deemed the most illegally downloaded television show of 2012. Lombardo said it didn't seem to impact DVD sales, but he did express concern that illegal downloaders aren't getting the best copies of the show. Lombardo did say that his company is still firmly anti-piracy.
NVIDIA announced a new series of mobile graphics cards. Say hello to the GeForce 700M series. The 700M series is based on the Kepler architecture. On the software front, NVIDIA has tweaked some drivers and is touting its GeForce Experience software, which lets a user optimize all kinds of settings with one click. So if you don't know anti-aliasing from a hole in the ground, what you could do is use NVIDIA's GeForce Experience to optimize those settings based on your hardware.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. Do you want one of those hot new phones that's coming out? There's new phones coming out all the time, it seems like. Everybody's got an announcement. Whether it's an iPhone, maybe you want an iPad, new Samsung Galaxy S4, the HTC One, all kinds of great phones coming out. Before you get that new phone, or even if you've already upgraded, go get your old phone a price on Gazelle.com. Go sell it. It's the easy way. Don't mess with all kinds of complex mannerisms of doing this. And definitely don't just give it away or bury it. Get some cash out of it. Go to Gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Find your item. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads and get a risk-free offer for your gadgets. Gazelle locks in the quote for 30 days. And you'll get paid fast by check or PayPal. Now, that 30-day lock-in is the best part, because if you haven't bought a phone especially, you can go right now, lock in that quote. It will be good for a month while you go and get your new phone and set it up and everything. And then when you send in your phone at the end of the month, you'll still get the price you locked in earlier in the month. And generally, prices don't go up over time. They go down. So check it out. They're buying iPhone 4s, iPhone 4s, Samsung Galaxy S2s. They're buying all kinds of stuff over there. Find out what your iPhone, your iPad, or your Android smartphone are worth at Gazelle.com. Take a minute and go find out. Sell your used iPhone or Samsung Galaxy smartphone today. Get some cash in your pocket at Gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day that aren't April Fool's jokes, before we discuss the stories that are later on, Denise Howell, host of This Week in Law, Twill, and of course, BagAndBaggage.com. How's it going, Denise?
It's going great. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us today. Are you April Fool free? Are you safe?
I'm safe so far. In fact, you guys may not be safe, because I made sure I had whoopee cushions here in case we need them at any point during the show.
It's always good to be prepared. That's good. Well, one story that I think the television industry would wish was an April Fool's joke is Aereo not going away. As we mentioned this in the news views, what's going on?
Yeah, so Wall Street Journal is reporting that Aereo is in talks with AT&T and Dish. And here's how this system would work. Right now, there's no agreements. AT&T would sell broadband or wireless data subscriptions that would come bundled with Aereo's video service. Dish in the past has said it wants to offer smaller, cheaper packages of TV channels over the internet. And the reason why these companies would even work with Aereo, apparently it would reduce fees TV distributors pay to retransmit. And as I mentioned in the news views, there was that case that Aereo is doing well, and the U.S. Court of Appeals sided with Aereo, saying they don't need a license right now to retransmit. Wall Street Journal says DirecTV looked into a partnership with Aereo in the past, but due to its legal issues, found it too risky. Denise, what do you think the chances are we'll actually see a deal between Aereo and a major TV distributor like Dish?
I think they're good, because, as you said, the Second Circuit has just validated Aereo's business model with the you know, however many thousands or maybe millions of tiny dime-sized antennas that they have in an array, and as a way to make sure that they don't have to pay retransmission fees. So I think it's a good shot. You know, it's a way for the folks who are paying retransmission fees or would have to save some cash.
Tom, do you think that the broadcasters or these networks are going to ever take this idea that if you're just moving a signal, instead of it being through a coax, we're actually going to put it through the internet? Is that going to make a difference in their minds? Or are they going to say, no, we're going to fight tooth and nail and stay the way the system works now?
They're essentially fighting tooth and nail. I mean, and they're answering your question. They're not giving up. And this thing is going to have to go to the Supreme Court now, I believe, after today's ruling. So I don't see the television industry giving up anytime soon, because what they fought for many years was getting the right to kind of trick cable operators into paying retransmission fees. They couldn't get the law to change that said, look, you know, the cable operator, if they're bringing over the air stuff to people's homes, have to carry the over the air. There's a must carry rule, but they got the must carry rule to be tweaked so that if the broadcaster said, well, we're going to waive the must carry rule, then they could negotiate for charges. Now the court's essentially saying, look, it's an antenna. And it's a transmission directly to one person. That's legal in your house. It's legal over the internet. There really isn't any difference. And so this is a rational decision. I do think that they have a better chance of getting a partnership with somebody like AT&T, who's an internet service provider, as a boost to your actual internet subscription. Although Dish has had so many carriage disagreements with so many broadcasters, I'm sure Dish would love this. And other cable operators are going to love this if they can do it in a way that doesn't actually anger the big networks that are providing them all of the content.
Sarah, which partner do you think would make the most sense? Do you think AT&T, DirecTV, who looked into it, or Dish? And like Tom mentioned, Dish has been very aggressive when it comes to doing what they're doing, and they've really annoyed a lot of their partners. Which company do you think would make the best?
Well, I mean, DirecTV has been vocal in saying that this is scary, right? So DirecTV is sort of like, you know, we got lawsuits, it's going to the Supreme Court. Doesn't seem like the right amount of time to go up with a big partnership. You've got AT&T that seems open. But then you also have Dish. And like you said, Dish is a little bit of a, I was going to call it a lone wolf. I don't think that that's actually the right description. But yeah, Dish is kind of pushing the envelope a bit. I wonder at what point, I mean, we just need one partnership to work, to make sense, and then the rest will follow suit. That's the way these things usually go forward. Yeah, if I had to guess, I'd say Dish is probably the strongest partnership Aereo could possibly hope to partner with. But it looks like, at least at this point, AT&T might be farther down the line.
Yeah, Dish has been involved with all kinds of rumors. The discussions about Google working with them to do a wireless service, some kind of carrier for telephones or whatever you want to have. I think Dish probably would make the most sense. Although AT&T, if they had this as another service, it might just go down to something like VCast, where people just don't use a service that you have on your phone. It just, I think it would make more sense for an old TV distributor get involved with this, because it would probably rattle the cages of everybody to see what else these other distributors would have to do.
We got even weirder things happening with HBO, though. Remember when we had the director in Australia who kind of said something about piracy, you know, being a positive form of feedback, and then he had to backtrack on Twitter and clarify himself. Well, now the president of HBO programming, Michael Lombardo, you heard in the news fuse, says, yeah, we take it as a compliment. Didn't negatively impact our sales, and we're not pro-piracy, but I thought it was interesting that he tried to cast doubt on the quality of the copies you get. That seems a much more intelligent way of going about this than suing your fans. He said, one of my worries is about the copies downloaders are seeing. The production values of the show are so incredible, so I'm hoping that in the purloined different generation of cuts that the show is holding up. Denise, what do you think of this gambit of saying, oh, piracy, you know, sure, of course, it doesn't seem to be impacting our sales. I just hope your copies are decent.
The guy seems to be a realist. I think he probably gets that the piracy of the show is actually contributing to its popularity, which is a good thing for them. That seems to be what I'm reading between the lines here in his quote. But of course, they have to take the party line that, you know, they're not going to encourage it. It is smart of them to try and discourage it in the way that you say, Tom.
And I think it was interesting the reaction I got on Twitter from people saying, well, but the copies that I see are, you know, 1080p. They're high quality copies. There's nothing wrong with them. That's sort of missing the point of sowing uncertainty and doubt, Sarah, don't you think?
Sure. Right. I know. It's if the copies look good, then they look good, right? Although I think that there is some truth to, I mean, it's sort of, you could think of it with the music industry as well. You've got bootleg copies of music, especially back in the day when illegal music files were extremely rampantly being shared and with varying degrees of quality. And the people who cared enough would say, you know, it's kind of worth it to buy it because you don't have that standard otherwise. Game of Thrones is a very slickly produced show. I mean, everything's on location. It looks really beautiful. I wouldn't want a degraded version of the show because I like the show, you know, in its purest form. So I think there is a little bit of a perception of, well, maybe I'm getting this illegally, but it's not as good as it would be if I was going through the proper channels. Perhaps I'll plunk down eventually for, you know, the paid version of Game of Thrones. But I think, honestly, HBO is benefiting so much just from word of mouth because it's such a popular show. And yeah, I think that they probably have the right attitude. As Denise said, being a realist here makes a lot more sense than trying to fight something that is a losing battle.
This is a big change. I mean, we could never imagine hearing somebody in his position say stuff like this several years ago. Should we push and say, look, well, then drop the other foot. Let us buy HBO without a cable subscription.
I'm sure that the HBO programming head is trying to get this shift too, because like I was mentioning with the other story, there's all these changes going on with TV distributors. HBO's got to worry about its future in the long run. What are they going to do? It would be great if they would allow HBO Go to be purchased separate. I believe it's available overseas that way, but not here. But I'm just thinking about the quality of video. I've only seen a couple episodes of Game of Thrones, and I'm assuming that they stay in big grassy fields and some dark shots, and those are compression nightmares. As far as I've ever compressed my videos, I know I've seen that there's always issues with those things, and you want to get good copies of this. If HBO just made it easy to get, apart from cable, I think they probably would make a ton of money. And I think there's other websites out there dedicated to this. How much would you pay for HBO separately without cable? I mean, you want to watch a really good copy of this, because if they're going to put this much money into it and you're seeing these beautiful locations and these great shots that are done expertly, why not see the best quality?
You know, when I went to this Game of Thrones premiere a couple of weeks ago for the season 3 premiere, and there were a bunch of people from the cast there, and George R.R. Martin was there, and that was actually one of the, in the Q&A after we all watched the episode, one of the topics that got brought up was, well, what about the whole piracy thing? You know, isn't everybody freaking out? And apparently Australia is number one country of the most pirated copies of Game of Thrones. I'm not exactly sure where George R.R. Martin got that data, but that's what he said. And, you know, it was almost like everyone was kind of laughing about it. I'm sure everyone at HBO is not flippant about piracy. I mean, this is something that you actually have to really take into consideration and take seriously. But it's like a big wink-wink joke thing. Like, yeah, we're pirated, but we're really popular too, you know, selling DVDs.
It's a great object lesson in what people have said for years, that, you know, piracy is not driving you out of business, music industry and movie industry. And here, clearly, that's not what's going on with HBO. If anything, it's helping them.
And if you are going to make a proposition in the marketplace to compete with free, it's I've got quality. Even if there are plenty of great copies of Game of Thrones available illegally for download from, say, the Pirate Bay, there are plenty of crappy copies. So you have to work a little bit to make sure you're getting the good copies. And you have to make sure you're not downloading something that isn't like a fake, that isn't, you know, some kind of malware disguised as a video. It may not take that much work, but it is work. So if you're given an option where you can pay a little bit of money that you can afford and not have to work, people are going to take that option. So that seems to be the logical next step in this conversation. And then you can take all that money that you've saved and buy a Tesla S, because everyone else is, right, Sarah?
Yeah, everybody. Actually, Tesla has some good news. They said that they have surpassed their first quarter sales goal. The sales goal was 4,500 cars delivered. They ended up delivering about 4,700, 4,750. Those are Model S vehicles. So this is sort of the sedan version of the electric car. And their year-end goal is to deliver 20,000 cars by the end of 2013. And it looks like what they promised shareholders as far as getting some profits in Q1, this is something that they promised back in February, looks pretty good. However, they are saying that they are no longer going to be sending the 40, how do you say the KWH?
Kilowatt hour
battery pack option into production. I always get that wrong. Because there's a lack of consumer demand, which is interesting because this version with the smaller battery pack is by far the least expensive version. They had announced this budget Model S for about $50,000 back in December of 2011 and say, yeah, there's just not enough people who want this. They want the more expensive version, which is also the version that has performance increases, has a longer range on a full charge, that sort of thing. But here's what they're going to do. If you ordered one of these budget Model S's, you will get the 60 kilowatt hour Model S with software restrictions on your range. So you end up getting improved accelerations, you end up getting a higher top speed, you end up getting the supercharger hardware for free that allows you to plug into a supercharger station and fill up, and charge up your car in a really short amount of time, really quickly. But you don't actually have the range. So it's basically, you know, throttling your battery because we can't just have people who paid, you know, half as much for the car who get the same car. Ayaz, do you think that this is, you know, ripe for a jailbreak? Do you think that this is Tesla making the right decision here?
I think it's strange that they think that somebody who wants to buy a Tesla won't be smart enough to figure out a way around this. Somebody's going to figure this out because there are speed limiters on cars now. So you can do a workaround with that too. It doesn't surprise me that it does. I mean, I don't understand why they would even impose this limitation, apart from the fact that they don't want to charge these people this ton of money.
I've got a theory on that.
What's that?
My theory is they decided it was too costly to manufacture two separate lines. And so this is their way of solving that. And what Sarah said is exactly right. If you paid less, they don't want to appear to be giving you the same car because the people who paid more are going to be like, wait a minute, what the hell? And so Tesla may not even care if you hack the car and jailbreak it. That's sort of like, well, if you paid less, then you have to go to the trouble of hacking the car yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the numbers of what Tesla is able to deliver, I mean, they have good news for Q1, right? They're saying, look, we churned out more cars than we thought that we would. Maybe that initial estimate was conservative. But they are ramping up. They're trying to scale the production line process, right? So, yeah, if you've got one battery rather than two different kinds of batteries and the larger battery is just happens to be the one that is ordered more, it makes sense. And then they can figure out their pricing structure, you know, down the line a little bit. Denise, do you think it's just downright unfair that I might have a battery that I can't use the full capacity of?
No, I'm with Tom. I think that they have to do it for marketing purposes, but and it saves them money, as you say, not to have to make two lines. But, you know, once it's in your hands, what, are they really going to come after people who jailbreak the car? I don't think so.
I mean, after all
Took a DRM at the pump and said, yeah. Oh, no, you hacked.
But after all the bad press Tesla got about its range, wouldn't they want to make sure that their cars can go as far as possible? Why even bother to say, oh, yeah, you'll get this car, it'll cost you less, but, yeah, we're going to point out the range.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, once we get the first horror story of the person who was, like, stuck at an impasse in the snow and almost died because they had the 60... milliamp hour battery.
What are they supposed to do if they can't provide the battery, right? Are they supposed
smaller
to give
touchscreen.
Those people who paid less the same car?
That's the thing. Like, they would have a 17-inch touchscreen, give them like a 9-inch one. That's all you got to do. That'll save
no
thousands.
No tires. We never promised you tires. Sorry.
Still right. Too expensive for any car I can ever afford, so oh well.
Yeah. I'm not sure about Denise, but I'm not getting one either. Ayaz, either one of you?
Maybe yeah, 20 no, years.
The sports car model Teslas were wonderful, but this kind of looks like a Camry.
Yeah.
Can't see dropping $50,000 on it, even though it's, you know, wonderful technology.
All right, we got to take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show. We'll be back with Facebook, but not about the phone. They're taking on Reddit this time.
Yeah.
Hi, Tom, Sarah. Hello, everybody. I want to interrupt briefly to talk a little bit about Hulu Plus. Watch as many TV shows as you want, anytime, on almost any device with Hulu Plus. And we've got a special offer for you that doubles the trial of Hulu Plus. Have you tried it lately? Man, this is the best way to watch a lot of network programming that you cannot see any other way, like recent episodes of Grimm or Grey's Anatomy. I watch The Daily Show every morning on Hulu Plus. I don't want to stay up late. Colbert Report, Law & Order, The Office, even older classics like Firefly and the complete Star Trek oeuvre. The original series and every series after that. Hulu Plus is amazing. For $7.99 a month, you get classic TV shows, full seasons of current shows, and you can watch it almost anywhere. On your connected TV, I've got it on my Panasonic and on my Samsung and on my Vizio. On your Blu-ray player, Xbox 360 and PS3 have Hulu Plus. The Apple TV's got a beautiful, have you seen the new Hulu Plus interface on the Apple TV? Update your Apple TV if you haven't, it's gorgeous. On the Roku, on my Roku 3, I watch Hulu Plus most of the time. Also on mobile phones, tablets, and of course, as I am doing right now, on my desktop computer. I never stay up for Saturday Night Live. I don't have to. I got Hulu Plus. I love Hulu Plus. You will too. Try it free for 2 weeks. Double the trial offer when you visit HuluPlus.com/twit. HuluPlus.com/twit. And we do thank them so much for their support of Tech News Today, TNT, and we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Hulu Plus.
Thanks, Leo. And now let's talk about Facebook. How are they taking on Reddit, Sarah? What's that?
Okay, well, so last week we talked about how Facebook has had introduced some threaded comments and replies for pages or profiles that have over 10,000 followers or subscribers. But then, this is an article from BuzzFeed, noticed that ABC News' Diane Sawyer, the Huffington Post's Arianna Huffington, were both sort of inviting questions from users, which feels a whole lot like the AMA, the Ask Me Anything, that Reddit has been doing with wild success for some time now with a variety of, you know, luminaries and celebrities and kind of everybody in between. And it was sort of like, in Diane Sawyer's case, it was, all right, I'm answering questions for the next hour or so, Ask Me Anything, which not only helps sort of flood a bunch of comments, which helps people take advantage of the threaded nature of what Facebook's already offering, but kind of starts to point to, well, is this something that they're going to be doing down the road? Or are they taking a page from Reddit, as Facebook tends to do with a lot of other services that seem to be catching on? Facebook's journalism program manager, Vadim Larusik, says conversation threads are reordered by relevance to viewers and may appear differently to each person based on their connections. So that's kind of interesting. I mean, on a Reddit AMA, you've got comments that are voted up or down. So the whole, you know, the comments that are supposedly the best ones or the most engaging end up sort of rising to the top. On Facebook, it would be an organic experience based on your Facebook experience. So that's a little bit different. But it also does, you know, the ordering system includes likes, you know, so more likes, it would rise, more spam flags, a comment would get buried. So it sort of works the same way. And I just have to wonder, Facebook has got this big announcement later in the week. We might get some sort of a branded phone that's more Facebook branded than anything that we've seen before. Is the whole bringing the celebrities and brands back to keep conversations active on Facebook, is it all connected? Denise, does this seem like something Facebook's going to have success with? I mean, Facebook and Reddit are two very different communities. I think we could safely say that.
I think so. And I think you're right, Sarah. You hit on it in there that Facebook likes to try things that are working for other people. Mm-hmm. I remember Facebook before, you could have little short Twitter-like status updates. They rolled that out, and I'm not even sure if that's still there. So maybe it's something they threw at the wall and decided, you know, people like having a longer sort of experience when they're posting on Facebook. So I just think, you know, they see that it's working. It's a great way to bring attention to the site when they can get celebrities to come on and do this. So, you know, it's just good business, I think.
As I know Facebook, back in the day, there seemed to be a lot more integration with, there were Facebook Live events, and, you know, you had sort of a Facebook presence at something like the Oscars you know, with sports events or music award shows, that sort of thing. If they're still doing a lot of that, I see less of it. I don't know, is this a way to try to bring brands back to hang out on Facebook more?
I think there's a good chance of that. The thing that this brings attention to is the redesign on their comment threads, because the comments were pretty much miserable. It was very difficult to see what was going on, who was answering what. And just by finally integrating threaded comments, they have the ability to have a conversation. And the idea that you can see the people you're connected to up top, that I think is a unique experience that you're not going to get on Reddit. That's by the masses, whoever's clicking up, whoever's moving these things up or down. And the fact that Reddit's done this so well, it's not exactly mainstream compared to Facebook. I mean, Facebook is everywhere. There's almost a billion users, I think it is. What's the number now? 800 million? I forget at this point. But they have everybody. So it probably will help with engagement because they have an actual usable comment system, finally.
Yeah, I think this is not so much taking on Reddit as just adding in a nice threaded way of doing questions. And Sarah, I think you've got it. Like they're trying to bust up the relationship with celebrities, you know, kind of promote that as you get closer to an announcement that is probably coming up Thursday about a phone.
Well, and you have to assume, I mean, Facebook, I mean, the whole Reddit Ask Me Anything series is great. I mean, obviously it depends on who's answering the questions, and some people are going to be more interesting to individuals than others. But I mean, it's very popular, and I'm sure it's a somewhat unlikely place for Barack Obama, let's say, to say, all right, I'm going to be answering questions for the next couple of hours. But you know, his campaign, when he was, you know, going up for re-election, knew that Reddit was popular enough, so that was a really good place to be. Facebook wants to be that place. I mean, Reddit has a huge community and a lot of users, and that's all fine and good. But I know the people at Facebook must be sitting around saying, why are we letting Reddit be the place where celebrities answer questions? At the very least, they should also be doing this on Facebook.
Yeah, no, you're right. They want to suck in celebrities for sure. Let's. We're still in the April Fool's free zone, so this is a true story. Lenovo wants to get into making chips.
Yeah, either that or EE Times has pranked everybody. EE Times is reporting that Lenovo is going to get into the chip design business, and these chips are meant for smartphones and tablets. The EE Times says that Lenovo is going to expand its design team, IC design team, from 10 people to 100 people by the middle of the year. Lenovo smartphones have used a bunch of different vendors when it comes to processors. They've used MediaTek. They've used Samsung. They've even used Intel's dual-core Atom chip for their smartphones. And last week, there were reports that Lenovo was looking into buying NEC's cell phone business. Denise, do you think there's anything Lenovo could do to actually become a serious smartphone company?
I think this is a good first step. You know, I think they're looking at the fact that they're known for a particular limited kind of device, that they're either going to have to update that device to make it a lot more like a smartphone, or they're going to have to add in a smartphone division.
Tom, do you think that Lenovo's, would Lenovo go into the chip business for themselves, or do you think they would be making processors for everybody out there?
My guess is, and I don't know this end of the business as well as I maybe I should, but it would seem to me this is similar to why Apple bought PA Semi and why they now design a chip. They don't manufacture it. They don't fab it. And I don't get the idea from the story that Lenovo wants to be a fab. They want to design it. And that gives you control over what you can do with your phone. Now, the other thing Apple does is it has its own operating system. Is Lenovo going to go that far? They have shown indications that they put toes in that water every once in a while. So maybe they want to have an end-to-end design chain where they can come out with a phone that, like, this is our concept of what a phone should be. The thing about Lenovo is, I really am excited about their new line of laptops. I think they've done a great job sort of reinventing them from the ground up, but they're still in the tradition of the IBM ThinkPad. They're just extending that. So what are they going to come up with when they don't have a heritage to play off of? I don't know.
Yeah, Lenovo's done a lot of customization for their Android devices. They have their own skins. For Windows devices, they have their own app stores. I forget what they call their app stores. I think it's called App Market or whatever. So Lenovo's been very serious when it comes to the software side. If they could get into the chip design business, and great point, Tom, the design is different than fabrication of chips. If they get to do that, maybe they can have a system where their software is working very well with its own design when it comes to chips. Sarah, what do you make of this rumor? Do you think Lenovo should be doing this at all?
Well, Lenovo is taking it seriously, right? I think that if Lenovo feels like, if Lenovo thinks that by beefing up their design team, getting into the chip design business is the right move. You know, it doesn't sound like this is just something that's being talked about. This is something that Lenovo really wants to take seriously. And yeah, it's a really crowded market. So, you know, my first reaction is sort of like, well, really, Lenovo? But the thing is like they have had a lot of success, particularly, you know, in the laptop business. So it's not as if the Lenovo, the name, is something where people go, oh, eye roll, they'll never make it in this business. I think they could become a serious smartphone company.
I would hope that Intel was paying attention to this. I mean, Intel wants to get into this business. They want to get into mobile. If they could partner up with Lenovo and say, okay, you know what? You don't have to even worry about that. We've got this design stuff. We've got the fab stuff down. Don't even worry about this. We can take care of this. This is an opportunity for Intel out there. If they're seeing this, it makes sense for them to try to get to mobile with somebody as strong as Lenovo.
You hear that, Intel? IaaS wants you to buy Lenovo. Wait. That's
yes.
Not what
you heard it here first. That's the rumor.
All right, let's finish up with an interesting article on the New York Times from Sumini Sengupta about our mixed attitudes on privacy. It's mostly based on conversations with a behavioral economist at Carnegie Mellon called Alessandro Acquisiti. He has done many studies and says, look, our behavior is inconsistent with our opinions. We all say we want more privacy and we say we want transparency, but we don't act like we want privacy all the time, and transparency may not actually be encouraging us to protect our privacy. He famously was one of the minds behind a 2011 study that showed you could take pictures of people, do facial recognition, find their posts on the internet, and then figure out their social security number to a certain number of digits just based on the information publicly available. Not meant to be a scare tactic so much as to say this is how much information is out there if you really want to get it. He says how we're asked about our private information really changes what information we divulge. He did one study where he sent people out into a mall giving out coupons. People would not give out private info in exchange for an extra $2 gift card. So they said, look, we're going to give you a $10 coupon. We'll give you an extra $2 coupon if you give us some private info. People mostly said no. But if they said, hey, look, we're going to give you a $12 gift card unless you opt out of giving us private information, and then we're going to bump it down to $10. People were like, oh, no, I'll fill out the form and get the $12. So same exact proposition, just asked in a different manner, caused people to give up their private information. Also a study where people gave more private information when asked permission to publish it. Then they were given... A different group were given the question, we would like the permission to publish the private information anonymously, but also with age and birth country and sex. People gave more information when they were told that more information was going to be published. And then there's another study where private information is more likely to be shared when you're distracted. When they say, okay, we're going to publish this information. This is how we're going to give it. So you can decide how much you want to share. Also, here's this other thing we're going to tell you about. We're going to ask you another question. Okay, now it's time to share the information. When you put that other thing in there, people actually ended up sharing more information than they would have before. So all of these things imply that we don't really have a fair sense of how much our private information is valued. So does this change your mind about the privacy trade-off, Denise? I mean, obviously, I've just touched, kind of skimmed the surface here of these studies. But how does this affect your opinion on privacy?
Hey, wait, I thought we were saving the April Fool's stories till the end.
No, it's real studies.
yeah, this is really eye-opening stuff. It's on the one hand, you read through, and it's this lengthy New York Times piece, and you are just blown away by some of the things that he has found. But on the other hand, when you think anecdotally about the behavior of the people you know, and sometimes yourself, you can see why it's so all over the map. I think what we're coming down to is a state of confusion that's reflected in this article, and people willing to give away very sensitive information, either for fiscal reasons or arbitrary reasons, as Mr. Acquisti points out. And that's why we're seeing so many regulators and folks in government paying attention to the privacy issue now and feeling like they need to step in and take some control over the chaos. So,
and people, some people in the chat room are arguing like, well, we already know social psychology and things like prospect theory and how you phrase a question elicits different responses. There's more to it than that if you actually read in these articles. But even so, it's true that if you use prospect theory, you're going to get different responses, and that affects privacy revelation. So maybe you think you already knew this, but not everybody knows this when they go in to a situation where they're signing up for something. Does it matter, Sarah? That's just always the way it's going to be, and let's just be all Scott McNeely about this.
Well, you know, the chat room is pointing out, yeah, I mean, that's why social engineering works, right? It's you figure out a way to not always dupe somebody, but sometimes dupe people into agreeing into things because they're confused. This is also, the basis of advertising manipulation. You know, if something's $19.99, it sounds like it's less than $20, even though it really isn't. But that's sort of, I think, where this gray area comes in and why people get scared, right? It's like, well, advertising is about, I'm going to buy product X versus product Y, and product X somehow convinces me, and, you know, this and that. And this is a whole nother thing. This is not about like buying and consuming. This is more what we are sharing about ourselves online with services that so many people are signed up for that are free, that are manipulative in a way that can end up harming us, you know, put us in danger. And that's where the human behavior part of it gets really interesting, because you've got people who are giving up information. But if they were asked just slightly differently, maybe they'd say, whoa, wait a second. No, that's not what I want to do after all.
And I think the upshot here is, yeah, this is psychology. And we need to take that into account when we're making regulations. Maybe all the ways we're saying companies need to be transparent aren't actually going to help protect privacy because they cause these psychological effects. Ayaz, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I think one of the things about this study is that maybe people thought that they valued privacy differently than other things. I mean, there's advertising and there's spending money, but this idea that you want to keep your private information private, that we might be as easily manipulated as the study is showing, is, I think, the curious point. But I want to mention something about the actual New York Times piece. They actually have on the left rail a bunch of illustrated versions of what they're explaining in this long text article. I loved that. It was distracting me a little bit, but I'm like, wait a second. It's got little pictograms like comic books. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, and then you gave up.
They distracted you into reading the article.
Well, yeah.
See what they did there?
I like
and
that.
And he told them his social security number accidentally. Because he was just
I typed that in the URL bar by accident.
Pretty pictures.
Got earrings. What? All right. Let's... We can't avoid the elephant in the room any longer. It's time for the randomizer. YouTube's shutting down. Gmail's gone blue. Bing has a simplified interface. There's a glass-bottom Virgin Atlantic plane. All the April Fool's jokes are out there. Slashdot's encrypting its posts. Denise, do you have a favorite, or are you like me so jaded now that I no longer enjoy April Fool's the way I used to?
Oh, I always wind up chuckling at a few of the efforts that are thrown out there. And I always make sure to check in with ThinkGeek because those are always delightful. And so
actually,
my favorite.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. Yes. ThinkGeek always has something that makes me smile.
My favorite this year is probably the Trench Run beanbag toss.
I totally want that. Yeah. Yes. And ThinkGeek has a history of making these things real too.
Mm-hmm.
I think they introduced the 8-bit tie as a joke a couple years ago. And I was like, that's brilliant. And then it actually came out to be a real product. I really like the Google Nose one. I don't know if you guys have seen that one, where Google will identify smells for you or theoretically let you smell your computer so you can smell what something smells like. It just sounds like something Google would actually be working on just because it's crazy enough for them to do it. Because they have self-driving cars. Why not Google Nose? I thought it was pretty
funny. It's like Shazam for odors.
I guess so. That would be reverse Google nose. What is this smell?
April Fool's stuff is, you know, I don't think any of it's funny. I think it's just, what ends up happening is, like, we all know to look twice at every single thing that we read starting at midnight on April 1st. So then it becomes a, we know that this is fake. Is it clever? And in most cases, I think no. The answer is no. It's like, you had a whole year to think of this, and this is your dumb April Fool's joke? Dislike.
And I think that's my problem with it, is it's so expected now. What was fun about April Fool's to me was I didn't see it coming, right? Now everything, it's like, yeah.
Well, that's just a problem with aging, isn't it? I mean, when we're kids, we're probably like, oh, that's awesome. There's going to be this Google nose. And then we're like, oh.
When we were kids, there was no, well, when I was a kid anyway, there was no internet to
Do you think kids are jaded now? That's what I'm kind of curious about. I would expect a kid to fall for all of these.
No? Right. I don't know. I guess it depends on the kid. Yeah. I think that April 1st on the internet thing is pretty widely known. Well,
on the internet, that's like real life. Of course it's on the internet.
But it's not like
it's like on the telephone.
It's not like you're going to run into somebody on the street saying, hey, have you heard about that new Google thing? I mean, the internet is where these stupid things get propagated. It's where the April Fool's lives.
I can't wait to see Facebook with all the people who think YouTube is closing down because the contest is over. It's going to happen. You're going to see it.
It hurts.
These are the people you unfriend.
It's just, it's like everyone is so confused anyway, right? It's so hard to just make sure that there's not bad information spreading across the internet like wildfire anyway.
It's the one day to
enjoy. Down with April 1st.
It's the one day to enjoy bad journalism. Because every other day we're like, oh man, this is just.
It's not enjoyable though.
Right. Well, the fun part is what you can get people to believe.
I guess. Right.
Kind of like what you can get them to give up if you offer them $2 or $12.
We need to make April Fool's Day into something where, you know, we swindle money out of people. That's fun.
That's every day. That's fishing.
Well, let's stop living in the moment and let's start looking forward. What will April 2nd bring us in the calendar?
April 2nd will bring us Twitter's developer event. I mentioned it. I guess it was announced last week that press isn't actually invited to. So they're going to have a secret little developer event. Nah, it's not going to be a secret. It's just we'll learn more about it tomorrow.
Time for some incoming feedback.
Incoming message.
Got a message from Jack. He goes, I'm not sure how popular the official Unplugged Day, a Sabbath manifesto, is with tech geeks, but I bet it would be at least twice as popular if it was moved to April 1st, otherwise known as April Fool's Day. I've sworn off the internet this day for years now because I'm tired of all the lame jokes that happen on this date. I'm sure others like me would do the same if Unplugged Day were moved. What do you think, Sarah? Would you like to unplug today in general?
No.
Unless your bitter act is your April Fool's joke. Is it? Maybe it is.
Well, oh, I'm pretending to not like April
Sarah
Fool's.
You fooled me.
No. No, you guys. Stop trying to make April Fool's happen. It's not going to happen. Wait.
Worst April Fool's Day ever.
Right. I don't know. Would you like me to take April Fool's Day off next week or next year?
No.
Oh. Well, then I'll be here and I won't be able to unplug.
Okay.
So. I refuse to unplug. It's part of my very soul.
I'm glad you'll be at work next year.
Don't give in. Although I admire the sentiments, yeah.
Trina from San Antonio, Texas writes in and says, I just want to share some information I thought was interesting based on a comment regarding Best Buy on a recent show. The comment was something to the effect that maybe Best Buy would just end up as a place where vendors had their own stores for their products set up. This stemmed from the conversation related to the Samsung section at Best Buy. I thought this was interesting because I just watched a documentary about Best Buy in China, which described their successful model, which involved them purchasing an existing Chinese electronics store. The concept is that vendors lease space in the store, and Best Buy then gets a percentage of their sales. In the documentary, they indicated that on a good day, Best Buy could receive $2 million. Who knows what retail business models will work in the future?
Huh. The food court of consumer electronics is the future of Best Buy. That's interesting. Also interesting, Ben, who's a PhD student in economics at WSU, wrote in about a research paper that he's working on. Actually, is it his actual doctoral thesis, I think? Basically, the idea is that as 3D printers become more popular and more affordable, companies will start making their replacement parts more and more complex and hard to replicate. So we'll see a real world analog of the DRM war happen. I think that's kind of fascinating. to think about, and probably unfortunately true as well. Mm-hmm. Well, that is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Denise Howell, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here, you guys. Happy April Fool's Day.
You can find her on This Week in Law at twit.tv/TWIL and, of course, bagandbaggage.com. Anything else going on you want to tell folks about?
We've got a couple of great folks on Twill this week. We've got Jamie Rubin, who's been writing a lot about the new FTC rules for advertisers. So if you're interested in what you might need to disclose, if you're doing like a sponsored tweet or have sponsors for a blog, that would be a great thing to tune into. We also have the executive director of Yale's Information Society Project, and that's Margot Kaminsky on Friday.
Very good. Very good show. Check that out. That's Friday right after Tech News Today Live at live.twit.tv. You can also submit stories to our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. If you would like to have an effect on what we cover, we look at that every day to figure out what stories we're going to include in the day's spread of news, views, and discussion stories. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. Email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. You can also attach those MP3s via email as well. We'll be back tomorrow with John Falcone from CNET. See you then.